This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So Adam Peters made an appearance yesterday on the Pat McAfee show on ESPN. McAfee asked him a lot about a lot of different, you know, Washington football commanders related subjects, including, by the way, the name, which we'll get to towards the end of this. But Max cut it all up. I actually didn't watch it. I've read a couple of the quotes. It sounds like he said more than he's typically said in the past. Adam Peters is perfect for the job in terms of not disclosing anything competitively. I think he does a really good job. He comes off as likable and yet not answering anything and yet not arrogant. That's kind of, you know, an overarching theme to the organization today versus yesterday, meaning, you know, under Snyder. This is an organization with some humility. The obvious is it's competence versus incompetence, but the arrogance of the last organization was so off-putting, and from my standpoint, there really isn't anything about the new group that is off-putting. And, you know, sometimes we look for, you know, there have been, look, there's some goofy stuff and some cliches and a lot of idioms about, you know, Mondays and talked whatever the, you know, the Monday, what does Quinn call it? I don't mind any of that stuff. That stuff is fine when you're winning. But overall, there's just, I think, a very mature humility to the franchise. You know, for those of us of a certain age, it wasn't just all of the winning in the 80s and 90s. It was the way they won. They won by not telling you that they were going to win. And in fact, downplaying that they were good over and over again. That came really from Gibbs as much as it came from anybody else. But there was an incredible humbleness to their dominance that made them, I think for reasonably thinking people, that's subjective, I understand that, it just made them even more likable. I mean, there was nothing better than nobody kind of thinking Washington was anything other than, yeah, they're pretty good. They're going to be in the playoffs again. And then just making a deep run and winning, you know, a couple of road playoff games in Chicago. All right, I digress. Back to today. Adam Peters, the team's general manager. Talking about the Commanders, maybe this is not as much humility, but he's talking about the Commanders are now a cornerstone franchise. I haven't heard this one. Max, play it.
That was one of the biggest reasons why I really, really wanted to have this job. And the fact that this is a cornerstone franchise, the NFL, a place where, you know, growing up, this was the team you were watching, hearing about DC in the area and RFK, and then coming in and Josh being the owner and us having, and him having that vision of bringing this back, being a steward of this DMV area, and just really was appealing to me. So I really, really wanted to get this job. And so far it's been awesome. I mean, being a part of this, being just around everything that's happening, all the excitement, the stadium, the draft now, just really feel really grateful and thankful that I'm here.
Yeah, that's not the answer that I was thinking it would be. It's a great answer. And it's like for people of a certain age, and Adam Peters isn't, you know, Didn't grow up really. How old is Adam Peters? Is Adam Peters 50 yet?
No, there's no way. If he is,
he's 45.
Okay,
he's 45. So he's just old enough to remember, you know, the Skins being one of the cornerstone franchises of the league. And look, people in the NFL, and I've talked a lot about this, about the desire to see Washington be relevant again, which, you know, is more. It's more than just us. There are NFL lifelong fans that when a team that's been downtrodden as long as we've been, they're excited to see the team back. You know, if Cleveland ever came, I mean, Cleveland never has had the success Washington's had, unless you go way back pre-Super Bowl era. But, like, I think it would be cool if Cleveland was a legitimate contender for a period of time, because their fan base has been incredibly loyal to that team over the years, and it's a great fan base. Peters knows, you know, Josh Harris knows. I thought about recently, like, what if a guy like Tillman Fertitta, who owns the Rockets, remember he was in the running, as was the Canadian guy whose name is escaping me right now. What if you ended up with more of an outsider having bought the team? We would have been thrilled because it would have been sold by Snyder, but it would have been different. I'm not saying that the results would have been any different. Well, I don't know how they would have run the team. But Josh Harris and Mitchell Rales in particular, and Mark Eine as well, they have a true innate historical knowledge and context of what this thing was and what it should be moving forward. And I think that there's some benefit to that. This was Peters talking about last year's draft process and when they knew Jaden Daniels was the guy.
Well, I think it was just a process of everything from the moment he got in here, the moment we flew him in for interviewing for him after we drafted him, and he wanted to go through the playbook while he was here, and he was doing like dropbacks on the plane back to flying back to LA. And just every step of the way, you could see the humility that he had, the work ethic that he had, just the way he connected with his teammates out the fields are right over here, like out on the grass, and the way he went about everything. He earned everything he had. And so it was just kind of a step-by-step process, but you could feel it right away, what a special person he was.
You know, that was the, you know, part that cinched it. They needed to know that they were drafting a guy that was, you know, good and loved football, which is the saying these days. But, you know, we talked about this last year, and especially after the draft. I think a lot of us were told basically the first time Adam Peters legitimately turned on the tape and watched, he was blown away with what the player was in that final LSU season. The R&D or the analytics people blown away. And by the way, completely destroying some of the, you know, analytics narratives that were out there, you know, things like pressure to sack percentage, et cetera, you know, intermediate throws. They destroyed a lot of that narrative out there by watching the actual, you know, games, you know, play by play rather than looking at just numbers. But that had to be the first part. Like, oh my God, this guy is off the charts in terms of what he has the potential to be as a quarterback in the NFL. And then the next part was bringing him in and praying to God that he was the other part. Loved football, good teammate, great culture guy, etc. Had the work ethic, had the smarts, and he had it all. He was, you know, taking dropbacks on the plane. This was Adam Peters on the Pat McAfee show yesterday talking about sort of the emphasis in this offseason to bolster the offensive line.
I think in the offseason when we had the opportunity to get Tunsil, which, you know, it doesn't come around that often to get a blue chip left tackle, one of the best left tackles in the league. So we felt that was an opportunity that we didn't want to pass up. And for the reasons you're talking about, like, we want to protect Jaden, and really he's the cornerstone of our franchise. We want to make sure we're protecting him. And then, so we got that done. And then we really wanted Connerly. And that letter was cool because, you know, Cliff He's a tireless worker. It's unbelievable how much he works. And as he's doing draft prep, he's also watching college teams for different plays and different like scheme and just different things he can learn from them so he can implement into what we do. And he watched a lot of Oregon. So he said, I watched every single snap of Oregon. And like he usually just watches like the skill guys, the quarterbacks, receivers, tight ends, running backs. And so he left that note on my desk. He came by to say what's up and just wrote that down and left it on my desk. I was like, all right, well, if Cliff wants this guy, then I'm good.
Yeah, a couple of things about that answer, hearing it for the first time. Just a reminder, if you didn't know what he was referring to, Cliff Kingsbury put a note on Adam Peters' desk before the draft saying, Oregon's left tackle, please. He was a big fan of Connerly Jr. There's also the part in there that Cliff watches a lot of college tape. Why? Because the innovation in football comes at the lower levels offensively. It just always has. High school level and college level. Cliff's been a big part of that. You know, being a part of Air Raid, Hal Mumme, and everybody that followed. And Cliff, you know, is looking for new things. You know, to implement at the pro level. And Oregon's always one of those teams, you know, going back to Chip Kelly and Cristobal and Dan Lanning, the whole nine yards about what Oregon's been about. And he saw and recognized Connerly Jr. At that point. A follow-up, by the way, to him bringing Cliff into the conversation of talking about the offensive line, he was asked by McAfee if he was worried about losing Cliff to a head coaching gig in this offseason. Here's what Adam Peters said.
He's a great coach and he's a great person, but I think what's cool about here is what the culture DQ has created, where people want to be here, people want to stay here, they're having fun working, they're having fun playing, so it makes it an easy decision. If it's not your perfect role that you want to move up to, whether it's head coach or something else, you have a great home here. And really, that's how I felt when I was in San Francisco under John Lynch, where I really loved being there. But if there was the great opportunity came like it did with Washington, then I could take it. But if not, then you know I'm really, really happy here. And that's the culture that DQ has created within the staff here.
Yeah, you know, Cliff Kingsbury, remember, is still getting paid for another two seasons as a head coach by the Arizona Cardinals. So I guess they're picking up the delta between what Washington's paying and what they would have been paying. So he's making head coach money because they had signed him to that contract before they ended up firing him. The jobs that Kingsbury could have had were not the most attractive in this, you know, head coaching cycle. You know, there was talk of him potentially being a candidate in New Orleans. New Orleans is in trouble, man, cap-wise, talent-wise, et cetera. There was, you know, the opportunity potentially if Ben Johnson took somewhere else like New England. Chicago, I think, would have been interested. But Ben Johnson, I think, was the first choice there. Is it possible that that Vegas would have been interested? Maybe Dallas would have been interested, perhaps, but not the greatest of opportunities. The Chicago and New England opportunities in this offseason because of cap space, draft choices, and, by the way, of course, young talent at quarterback were the ideal, you know, opportunities. And New England went Vrabel. They could have gone Vrabel, I think, last year, but Vrabel held out, you know, did the 1 year holdout thing. And then Chicago went Ben Johnson from Detroit. Will there be better opportunities next year? Maybe. I would certainly, Cliff, you know, I do believe Cliff when he says, you know, I'm happy right now. I love, you know, just coaching offense. But a competitor like Cliff Kingsbury, you know, at whatever age he is, early 40s, is going to take another swing at being a head coach. I don't think there's any doubt about that. All right, this was more from Adam Peters than I think we've gotten before on the acquisition in the offseason of Deebo Samuel.
Yeah, that was really cool. It was actually at the combine. I was hanging out with Lynch at lunch, and we started talking about it. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of talks that go into it, but knowing Deebo from when we drafted him to just the competitor that he is on the field, he's one of the best competitors on the field that I've ever seen in my life. And just he can put a team on his back and will you to win. So understanding what type of person he was, understanding that I work with John, and you know, he's going to be awesome to deal with, and then understanding our offense, which is, you know, getting the ball out of Jaden's hands quickly, and he's really good at that, and getting the ball in space and moving fast. That's going to present a lot of problems for defenses.
If he's healthy this year, mark me down if I'm not down for this already, Max. I think Deebo Samuel's going to have a massive season this year. Health is everything with him.
Contract year Deebo?
It's contract year Deebo, but the fit is an excellent one, and this will be the best quarterback he's played with by miles.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, something that Peter said about Deebo Samuel has been a 49ers staple here during the John Lynch, Kyle Shanahan era. They look for relentless, high-energy competitors. I mean, that's what the 49ers have been about, right? With Deebo, with Kittle, with McCaffrey, with Trent, with Fred Warner, with who am I forgetting? I mean, Deebo, after the catch, is almost impossible to tackle. This is... I just have a feeling that it's not going to take long. If he's healthy, that's the big if, because he's been injured a bunch. If he's healthy, it's not going to take long for us to realize that a fifth rounder for Deebo Samuel was an absolute steal in terms of what he can be for this team with this OC and this quarterback. I think he's going to get used in so many different ways. He's going to take, you know, he's going to take jet sweeps for 8 yards when it should have been 2 or 3. He's going to take zone read, option handoffs from JD 5 when the defense is playing quarterback run, and he's going to rip those for 10, 15 yards. He's going to catch a bubble, break 3 tackles, move the sticks. He's going to be very effective in the red zone in particular. Again, health, everything. But if he's healthy, it's going to be a massive addition to this offense. This was Adam Peters on who he listens to when making roster decisions.
Yeah, we're listening to everybody in the building, AJ, and the R&D team especially. It's really cool because it feels like there's 14 people in this one little office. It's like a big think tank, and they're all really smart, and they're all really passionate. And like a cool story this year was when we drafted Trey Amos, who's like an R&D darling. We call him analytics, we call him R&D. But when we drafted him, you could hear like a roar from like 2 doors down because we drafted him, and that he fell to us, which was really awesome. But all his metrics were incredible. But listening to them and being their passion about whether we're making a trade, whether we're making a draft pick, whether we're signing a free agent. But then there's also the coaching aspect and, of course, the scouting aspect and everybody working together in unison and collaborating. It's been really cool, and we're just getting started. I think we're going to get better and better as the years go on.
I'm really interested in who the stars in the organization are. He didn't mention anybody by name. You know, there are a bunch of names that some of you guys are familiar with. You know, it starts with Adam Peters and Lance Newmark, you know, the assistant GM, who also had other opportunities after this season and decided to stay here. There's Brandon Sosna. I think he's different. He may be more involved in some of the game day stuff. But you've got, you know, Scott Fitterer, who is a former GM. You've got Tim Gribble still on the staff. You've got Blackburn, who's actually the head of player personnel. You've got some really sharp scouts. You've got some really sharp guys in what they call their R&D department or analytics department. A couple of holdovers from the last regime who are super talented. There's somebody, or there's a couple of guys you would have to think, you know, he goes to and really sees a future GM in. I'd love to know who those people are after, like, a guy like Newmark. All right, when we come back, a little bit more from Adam Peters. I'm actually interested in hearing him. You know, sometimes it's just true. These pressers where it's all local, you know, they ask the right questions. I'm not saying that they don't. But sometimes when you're on the Pat McAfee show, you get a little bit more out of the guests than you do when it's sort of the routine, you know, pre-draft, post-draft, pre-rookie minicamp, you know, presser, etc. What he said about Jalen Lane, you'll want to hear. That's coming up next.
All right, the arms race in the NFC Beast is heating up. The Steelers are sending George Pickens and a sixth-round pick to the Dallas Cowboys for a 2026 third and a 2027 sixth-round pick. After signing a three-year deal prior to the 2024 season, Gabe Davis has been released by the Jacksonville Jaguars. He had 20 receptions for 239 yards and two touchdowns in 10 games played. The Utah Hockey Club has officially decided upon a name following a 13-month process that included 850,000 ballots cast by fans in multiple rounds of voting. They will now be known as the Utah Mammoth. The Nats split the doubleheader with Cleveland. Game one, they win 10-9. Jorge Lopez gets credited with the win. Kyle Finnegan gets the save. And game two, they lose 9-1. Brad Lord has six innings pitched, three hits, gave up three earned runs, and four strikeouts. The Caps drop one of the Canes 2-1 in overtime. Jacob Slavin with the overtime winner. And the Canes just outplayed the Caps and outshot them too, 33-14. Logan Thompson saved 31 of 33 shots, still at two in. Game two is tomorrow at 6:45 on 106.7 The Fan. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.